Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
We are a small secondary college in a country town in northern Victoria, Australia. We believe that we are unique.
My name's Matt Carver, current principal at St. Mary of
when
the Angels.
When we arrived, there was an old...
So I've got a podcast which I run through my little school.
Hi, my name is Michaela Brooks. I'm the senior school team leader. My favourite thing about St. Mary's is the students.
So if you are interested in education or just what it's like to be someone who's in a small country town in Victoria in Australia, I'd love you to listen. It's Angels and Angels. All
the
second
stage tanks now pressurized. The podcast that I'm working on at the moment and is going to be released sometime in the new year, it's the story of how a small little Wiltshire town became one of the most weirdest places on the planet, a focus for UFO sightings and all kinds of things, to the point that a local paper actually put out a headline of prepare for alien invasion. There's this really brilliant story about people who belong to UFO groups and the rivalry between them. That's the story that I've been fascinated with since I was a kid because I lived just down the road. So look out for it. It's just simply called Warminster.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right, Your Honor.
This is Dumpty Dum, sponsored by Managers.
This is Dumby Dump, the show about the Kentucky drama that are centered in Ambridge in the heart of the Midlands. I'm the plump, free-range turkey who is Royfield Brown. With me have our feathered friend, Pose Swerve the Auction, who is...
Kerry Warbis.
And this week's chlorinated shot is...
Peter Fickling.
And this week's Dumby Dump is from Francesca Word Salad, our musical friend over there in Cardiff, the land where everyone can sing on. Point. Now, Kerry, if someone else would like to sing us in the Dum Dee Dum, though, Kerry, if somebody else would like to sing us in Kerry, if somebody else would like to sing us in a Dum Dee Dum, we don't want any more festive ones, just saying that up front, because we have about another two festive ones and Christmas is in a matter of hours. So, right, we don't need any festive ones, but if somebody would like to send us in a Dum Dee Dum, how can that be done?
If you would like to sing us a Dumpty Dum or leave us a plot prediction, then call us on 0203 031 3105, leave us a message on SpeakPipe or send a text message starting with Dum to 077 862 00690. Thanks to our social media supremos, to Cosmo for his podcast roundups, Mike Hatton for his character counts, and Sharon her voices, plus of course Lucy V. Freeman.
On this episode we hear views from Cheryl, Brian, Quentin Rayner, Jonah, he's back, Fiona, Claire from Clapham, and our Glyn. Now, we don't have a hot topic of the week because because we decided that to be talking about Eddie's turkeys would be a little bit too frivolous. I think we all know what the hot topic of the week is, and we're going to deal with that after it's Amber's the week that was in Ambridge.
Hello, Dumpty Dum. I'm Amber, and on This Week in Ambridge, Oliver and Eddie smuggle turkeys in a welcome break of Christmas frivolity. Scriptwriters twist the knife in further as the horses quarrel about their multiple gratitudes to Philip. Tracy proves herself to be the only person in Ambridge with her head screwed on as she kicks Roman Trench into touch. Award for side character with the silliest name is still pending. In the absence of a Christmas pantomime, Victoria and Philip have a face-off for Pantomime Villain of the Year. Hopes that no one can be that mean really, and that she's really a police officer undercover, go as yet unanswered. And that was the week in Ambridge.
Thank you for that, Amber. Pete, and good to have you back just in time for Christmas. Just before we delve into all the goings-on in Ambridge this week, do we have all of our presents? And what tier are you both in?
We do. I've done all my presents. I've wrapped them. I'm in tier two here in Brighton. So not so bad, really. For example, I went to have a Sunday lunch in a pub yesterday. So you can do things like that, whereas in the higher tiers, three and four, that is not allowed.
Are you suitably recovered?
I actually, this week is the very, very first week that I'm totally normal, in inverted commas.
Did look radiant on the old Friday Zoom. Pete Ficklin, I'm guessing that you're in an elevated tier. You're in an important
tier. Four.
Tier.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. We get frog marched through cheap dips of experimental vaccines by Matt Hancock's boot boys every morning.
Peter's not allowed to look out of the window.
Windows, Kerry? They've been bricked up for weeks now. It's serious here in London.
Gosh, just in time for Christmas. So what's Christmas going to be like in the Fickling household?
Beautifully dull, I hope. Life's been way too exciting this year. So, I mean, I am very, very sympathetic to a lot of my friends and family and everyone else's friends and family who've, you know, had their plans curtailed. But we'd already, without wanting to sound smug, we had predicted that our beautiful Conservative government will muck things up. So we had sort of, we didn't even try and organise anything.
On that note, let's move on and have a little bit of this.
Hello, Ambridge 3962.
First off, it's me podcasting dad. It's Glyn Fuller Love. He's out and about.
Hello, Dumpty Dum. It's Glyn here, out on location again. And the pigs that I mentioned 2 or 3 weeks ago, they are back out in their field. So a picture of them will now appear on the Dumpty Dum Facebook page. And also I found some sheep, which are reasonably seasonable. Couldn't find any donkeys, but you know, sheep feature at this time of year in certain Christmas stories, so the sheep will be there too. Turning to the archers and the sort of main issue of last week and whether we should have heard the voices of the slaves or not, I can fully understand where Royfield is coming from, and no, it wasn't absolutely necessary that we needed to hear those voices. I think we all had lots of empathy, lots of understanding of the position already, lots of realisation of who the real victims were. But I think it was justified in that it did ensure that they are seen at this point in the denouement of the story as the main victims of Philip Moss, rather than being any sort of lingering sense that the main story is what impact this might have on Kirsty or the village or something else. And I think putting the focus on the main victims is the right thing to do. On the other story of the week, the curious case of Roman Trench. Well, I'm not sure what the actor that played Roman had done to upset the scriptwriters, but it seemed doubly cruel to get rid of him and also to get rid of him in a way that saying to him, oh, we know you're an actor, and we know you play an actor, and the actor that you play is going to get a fantastic job in a fantastic location at a time when jobs for actors are really difficult to come by. And that's how it seemed a bit cruel to me. Anyway, happy Christmas or other festival to all in Dumpty Dum Land. Speak soon.
Glyn amongst the sheep there. that's interesting, isn't it? Already we're straight in with the whether the slaves should or shouldn't have had their voices heard as part of the archers. So whilst he understands your point, Royfield, he does think it was justified, so that the focus is on them as individuals and as being the main victims of Philip.
If we go back, this story's been out and in the wild since about March, and we've heard just about nothing in the greater scheme of things actually from them since the big reveal. And I appreciate that you couldn't hear their voices. I suppose you could have actually heard their voices beforehand. But since the big reveal, we've literally really heard just about nothing. And I would say, has the story moved on with fundamentally them almost being mute all the way through? Absolutely, it has. And I'd say that their kind of relative silence has actually spoke volumes. And as evidence, I'd give you the two episodes this week, which were really fundamentally about the slavery storyline. So there was the episode with Blake, Kenzie and Jordan. And then there was the episode where we had Philip, Victoria and Gavin talking about the sale of the trio to Victoria. And for me, the episode which was much, much more powerful and gave me a gut punch was the episode where they were sold. They're not in that episode at all. And it was underlined, if almost you could have it underlined, the utter inhumanity of the slavers with the portrayal of Victoria coming along in a flash car. She didn't care other than for her bottom line that one of the trio was actually still quite ill and recovering from his injuries. That, for me, was a much more powerful issue, much more powerful episode than hearing the three of them together, because I didn't need to hear them to have any more empathy. And I would say, did we not realise that these were young men, adults, who were vulnerable? We knew that anyway. I was touched, because I'm a human being, about the fact that they were so lost about really what their true situation was, that they wanted to get Philip present. Yeah. But ultimately, the episode which had the biggest punch was the one where they weren't in. And for me, that just goes to underline that very eloquently, the script writers have almost kind of agreed with my position in that this has been going on for 9 months and we literally haven't heard from them. And that, for me, is much more powerful, much more powerful. Anyway, that's me.
It was a powerful episode to hear Victoria saying, you know, these lads could go for less than 20 quid and he's damaged goods anyway. And that definitely, you know, yes, it had power, but I still believe it was right and good to hear from Blake, Kenzie and Jordan themselves and to hear their perspective on things.
But we kind of knew their perspective. But listen, I appreciate that we're listening to a drama, but we're listening to a drama also about a really powerful and important topic, which I will hold my hands up, and I think, Peter, you are the same. At the start of this, I was not aware that this was such a big issue. And I remember when it was revealed that they were modern day slaves, I went, come on, you know, the archers have jumped the shark here. Completely and utterly hold my hands up, say that I was wrong. And the Beeb played a blinder with the depiction of the storyline and the fact that in 2020 there are people all surviving in this manner and there are people who want to profit off the backs of other human beings. It's just utterly shocking. And the other thing, and let's be honest about it, is what makes it probably even more shocking, this is white on white slavery. It's something which hasn't been mentioned at all. If these were immigrant Vietnamese cockle shell pickers, you're going to go, well, it's these people who are other being abused and being exploited by other people who aren't British, who aren't English, who aren't the right stuff. Hats off to the Beeb. you know, as we said before, this is, without wanting to be overly dramatic about it, but, you know, my surname is Brown. My surname should not be Brown. My surname is the surname of my slaveholders, of the slaveholders of my ancestors. And large parts of my history have been totally been erased. My family's history has been totally been erased because of slavery. So this does have a certain resonance for me. But in terms of telling this story, there is no grey areas that the story's been told so powerfully and that the silence is magnified by not having to hear them. And purely from a dramatic point of view, stylistically, if you tuned into The Archers without hearing that theme tune on the episode where Blake, Kenzie and Jordan were talking, that wasn't even an episode of The Archers. It wasn't. It was utterly jarring. But that is, in my greater critique of the whole storyline, by far the smallest point that I want to make. But I resteth my case here. And I know that there's a couple of other people who call in and say, mate, you're wrong. And one or two that say, yeah, fair point.
Yeah, it's interesting what you say there about it. It didn't sound like The Archers, because I saw some tweets saying, you know, what's this? This isn't normal, you know, tale of everyday folk kind of stuff. But good. There should be other elements of what goes on in the world brought into The Archers from time to time. And, you know, your point you make about there aren't any grey areas, I know what you mean by that, but I still think I learned things from Blake, Kenzie and Jordan's conversation about those men.
There's been a lot of press about modern slavery off the back of this storyline. So just props to the BBC, because truly, just like sepsis, I was barely aware of it. I didn't realise it was such a big thing and it was actually a killer. That gained awareness with me personally. Ditto with this as to how prevalent it actually is. And as I said, it's not other. It's not Vietnamese cockle pickers. It's not Nigerian teenagers being smuggled into the country to be domestic servants at the hands of rich other non-British people. But did we not honestly know that there's going to be human beings, young Brits, who are vulnerable that would be part of this? Absolutely. And this is where we are actually all complicit as a society, that we can allow young people who've had a tough childhood not to have the support of the wider community and, dare I say, the state, so that by the time they leave their broken, hard households, if they even had it as children, then they are prey to people like Philip Moss.
No, I think I've been trying to think of the right way of saying this, and I think that it's not a criticism. I think because you're a good-hearted man, I think you're suffering from a failure of empathy for people who don't have your curiosity for these topics, who don't have your innate sort of sense of concern for people who might be more vulnerable. And so one of the things that Glyn said, which I thought was very poignant, was that he was saying about drawing focus back to the real victims. Because if you have been watching Twitter, for instance, we have all been fussing around Gavin. What's Gavin's role? How complicit is he? Should get, you know, is there any chance of redemption? Poor old Kirsty. It's probably been far more concerned for Kirsty than there has been for the slaves. There's a slight contradiction to what you're saying, because you're saying on the one hand that the BBC's done a great job of showing us about modern slavery and bringing it back to the fore and making people like you and me rush to Wikipedia to kind of research it some more. But then also that we don't need to hear their stories or delve deeper. Now, you don't need to, maybe, but there are plenty of people out there who, for instance, I think I mentioned to you before, Charles Barkley called out Michael Jordan for having a very unsympathetic and uncharitable attitude towards homeless people, and would say, why don't they just get a job at McDonald's? And I think the point is that the value of hearing from Kenzie, from Jordan, from Blake, from hearing about some of their backstory, is to hear how these people have not just given up on life and then sort of like found themselves drifting into, you know, Philip Moss's malign net. They are people who have been exploited time and time again from childhood through to adolescence and then now into adulthood. And yes, for you, that's an innate and an easy understanding, but there are plenty of people out there who have to have that shown to them quite clearly. And I think that's the value of it.
It's a fair point. But what I would say, though, is that after completely and utterly lauding and bigging up the writers, they made the decision to literally keep them mute from March.
And I disagree with that. I don't think they should have done that. I think, personally, well, I think we should have heard more from them. But
well, in hindsight, for me, because I'm so utterly, this is a black and white issue, they should have actually had them on mic since, right? They actually should have. And it's almost as if they've said, we can tell this story without hearing their voices. You can understand this is slavery. So there is no moral ambiguity here. And just for what it's worth, I don't care about Gavin Moss. And I know I've said this before, but for me, he's just part of the whole complicit evilness of it. Yes, it's dawning on him what he's part of, and that's great, but still lock him up, throw away the key as far as I'm concerned, right? But I appreciate that the writing is so good that we are feeling empathy for a slaver. That's great writing, but morally, it's incredibly clear.
You brought up historic slavery and specifically to do with your family, and I think that's one of the reasons they need to have the voices of the modern slaves. As with, for instance, if you say concentration camp, people immediately start to think about Jews and homosexuals and black people, in fact, and gays being, sorry, I would say homosexuals, being rounded up for concentration camps in Nazi Germany. We don't think about the concentration camps in the Boer War. We don't think about concentration camps for the Japanese, when they were interns during the Second World War. It's become a kind of an instant call and response. Concentration camps equals the Ukraine and Germany, wherever else. And the same thing with historic slavery. Unfortunately, it's become an unnuanced kind of topic of discussion. When you say slavery, you think about black people being put in boats from Africa and being taken to the Caribbean and the Americas. And so in order to help to give that nuance, to give some extra shade to it and to educate people about the fact how modern slavery takes place, you need to hear from the modern slaves, I think. And I think only recently for me, and I'm ashamed of this, my understanding was very much from the perspective of a colonial perspective. And I hadn't learned or taken the time to learn about the experiences of the people on the ground who were suffering. By the way, I do agree with you stylistically. I didn't like it at all. But that's a whole other conversation. But I did appreciate what I learned.
Our positions on this are actually remarkably close, right? And to talk about historic wrongs, yes, the very first concentration camps were set up by the British in the Boer War, which is something which gets neglected by casual observers of history. So when it comes down to that institution, that way of corralling a people, we did it first. Full stop. We agree that stylistically, the scriptwriters took a decision in March. And obviously, there's been conversations around that script table where, even though fundamentally it says, we're going to keep them mute, we can tell this story, it's incredibly powerful. At some point, for added oomph or emphasis or empathy, sorry, that's the word I was searching, not emphasis, empathy, I've decided to throw them in. I actually think, and maybe I believe too much I watch too many Disney movies, but to hear their voices afterwards, to give them a week after Philip Moss gets his comeuppance, would have been much more powerful. Because symbolically what you're saying, here are people and they are silent. You don't have to hear them to be on their side. However, when they are released, when the police swoop in, when Harrison Burns or whoever is going to go and rescue them and they get let out, then we hear them, would have been much more powerful. But maybe it's because I believe in the Tooth Fairy and Disney movies that I think it would have been much more powerful to hear them then. But I take your point, and it's a point really well made, Peter, that not everybody is some do-gooding, wannabe liberal, Guardian reading, left of centre bloke like me. I'm not going to say I think about slavery all day, every day. You can't be a West Indian Brit or even just a West Indian or an African American and not once or twice a week think about it or have a conversation about your position in society, wherever you are, and what it actually means. As I say to my white friends often about slavery, this is as living and real thing to me. What is my surname? This is the surname of the people that enslaved my great, 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 great grandfather. I can just about still do the greats to go back to when we were slaves. But you know what? We should move on. Now it's Fiona, and she's up in Aberdeen.
Hi, it's Fiona from Aberdeen here again, sharing my vintage as requested. Helen and Rob's storyline, I'm afraid. I know that makes me a relative newbie. I did also want to clarify that when I said that Ambridge might support the Builders, I did mean Blake and his two mates, not evil Phil, and less so, but still evil Gav. Also, a plot prediction, not non-specific, maybe plot possibilities if that's allowed, subject to romance. There'll be many singletons around, so who will end up with whom? Roy has to accept at some point Lexi has gone. Lily might ditch Ross if he's less fun than a night at the bingo. The scales surely must have fallen from Rex's eyes for Pip. Alistair's surely over Shula now. Jazzer, will the love-hate thing with Tracy play out like an old black-and-white movie? Amongst others, sadly Kirsty, possibly Chris, Toby, Shula, Pip, Jim, Peggy, not to be ageist. Too little time to cover the teenagers and the early 20s set, but where will Cupid's arrows land? Thanks again for a great podcast. Merry Christmas to all from Fiona in Aberdeen.
What a palate cleanser. Just yes, back to the archers I love. Lots of silly talk about gossip about who's dating who and potentially who's going to jump in the sack with who.
True. What a long list that was, though. I started writing them down thinking, yes, we'll discuss a couple of these. And I ran out of all these singletons who are looking for love in our beloved Ambridge.
She put Shula on that list, but she's only for love from the Lord, though, isn't she? So I think you can take her off the list. But yeah,
she just loves herself, really, basically.
Did Fiona mention Toby? Someone was saying the other day how much they dislike Toby, and I think I've got a big soft spot for him, so I'm curious about Toby, where he's going to end up. Maybe he'll fall back into Pip's malign grasp. Is Rex too young for Tracy? I'm trying to think of an alternative to Jazza. I mean, obviously, every fibre in my body aches for Tracy and Jazza to get together. But there's actually one of the things that stuck out when Fiona was rattling off her list very elegantly was that actually there's not many obvious pairings. Maybe the reason we're saying Jazza and Tracy is because they are of an age and of a personality type. But all the rest are very disparate in terms of kind of like outlook and age range, right?
Yeah, exactly. There's Alistair. Pip was mentioned as well. I mean, I can't imagine. I don't know. Who do you think could be with Pip?
Well, Rex is off to his council farm, isn't he? So that will be. He'll be going off there. I imagine Toby still will follow suit and end up over at that farm or whatever his new business will be once he's sold to implausibly sold his gin business. So I think we can park them over there. That's that. Pip's going to need some kind of an equivalent of Ruth, isn't she? Some kind of overly excitable young student to patronise to turn up on the farm as an intern. a generational thing. Ben needs a mini Natasha. He needs another equally sort of obsessive. He needs a kind of who's that lovely woman who's on? I'm a massive fan. Who was on Dragon's Den, the blonde lady, Deborah Meaden. Josh needs Deborah Meaden. Yeah.
Josh or Ben?
Josh. Or maybe Ben, actually. Okay. Josh. Maybe Josh has got entrepreneurial spirit to burn, and actually it's Ben who needs the kick up the arse that Deborah Meaden would give him. Yeah.
Lots of love to come in the future for these people, hopefully.
Oliver and Eddie, no matter how stupid, arguing over turkeys, that's the kind of archers I tune in for. Does it get you going, or is it just like, yeah, whatever?
I suppose there's a certain familiarity to it being Christmas, and there's some slight Grundy scheme. Grundy world of Christmas through to, selling some kind of bird. And there's always something that kind of goes slightly amiss. So on that hand, I'm like, yeah, this is the Archers. But I just don't want any more scammery corner cutting from the Grundys. I just think it's a bit lazy now.
Yeah.
If it was a case of Eddie's going to sell something for Christmas, let him sell it, let him execute on it, and go, you know what, Clary Love, we've earned quite a bit more money this year, more than I thought. Here's a little something for you.
Dun, 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 dun. If that happened, God, it'd be amazing.
Yeah, you know, we just want the best for the Grundys, don't we? We're just a little bit tired of 30 years of Christmas scams.
When he shouted out, didn't he, Clary, you'll have my guts for garters. And you thought, here we go. He must say that every single Christmas, mustn't he?
There's a lot of garters, not much garters left.
Yeah. It was quite nice hearing Oliver laughing and having fun in the very sort of strange situation that he'd found himself in with the turkeys in the mud.
Thank you for that, Fiona. And I hope you have a wonderful Christmas up there in the Granite City. Now, it's the gentleman who will be joining me on the podcasting mic next week. It's our Quentin Rayner.
Hello, everyone. It's Quentin Rayner here. I've got a feeling that Kenzie, Blake and Jordan actually appearing and speaking on The Archers this week has probably already been mentioned on this podcast, but these are my views for what they're worth. On first listening, I felt the scenes were somewhat shoehorned in. On second listening during the omnibus, I found them far more absorbing. And I've wanted to hear from them because I felt it would always drive forward the narrative arc and push forward the dramatic plot. And why shouldn't we hear from them? Because, you know, this is the issue, isn't it, with modern day slavery. These poor people are faceless. They are voiceless. They are invisible. And fingers crossed, their sweet wish to buy the ghastly Philip Moss a present for Christmas will be his undoing, and he won't be taking our beloved Krusty off to that Welsh cottage. On to other things. As a former broadcaster who started his career on BBC Local Radio, I've got to say I haven't shed a tear that apparently we have heard Susan's final radio show. I mean, not even her husband Neil was that bothered. I mean, he was more concerned with food ratios than the radio, and he missed the show, didn't he? Having said that, I will miss it because it is, her shoes were so potentially libelous, weren't they? You did think anything could happen here, but don't think I'm going to miss it that much. But we shall see. Maybe her fans will drag her back. So Tracy didn't go on the Roman holiday to the Maldives. Does that mean that she and Jazza are going to hook up? Are we going to have Trazza? I do hope so. That'll be fun. Make sure that you join myself and Rosie Porty and Roy Field on the 28th of December for an edition of Dumpty Dum. Look forward to that. So it's a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year from me to you.
Ah, lovely, Quentin. Hey, Peter, does that mean we have to ring in and plug when we're next on?
I was just going on my Google calendar to work out the date so I can get ahead and do it now. Yeah.
On first listening, shoehorned a bit, but then second listening, he really thought it was moving and it drove the plot on. Moving on from that, the Susan thing, again, Peter and I are in totally different camps on this.
Yeah, one of us is in the correct camp with the correct opinion, and one of us is in the wrong camp.
Yeah, so I'll tell you my correct point of view, which is that I don't shed any tears for her stopping either, whereas Peter, you actually wrongly would like her to continue. Is that fair assumption?
What I do like is that people have been trailing the kind of inevitable ding-dong between me and Royfield discussing the slavery issue, and we seem to have got through talking about that without any kind of controversy. And it's all going to go off the rails now. It's going to be a massive ding-dong. Yeah. If you're saying you don't like Susan's radio show, you're basically saying you don't like Susan, and that's fine. But she is so reliably entertaining. She is so sort of kind-hearted. She's so dense in terms of just entertainment and kind of like, you know, fun plot lines. Just, and the radio show just adds to that.
Peter. Just because I don't like her on the radio show does not mean I do not like Susan. It's not as black and white as that, Peter. There are nuances. between my relationship.
Are you saying that I'm being too Royfieldy about the about the Susan radio show? Okay,
yes. Right. I know you have to sort of stretch the bounds of plausibility quite often with the Archers, but her being on there in the first place, that wouldn't have happened. What she was broadcasting wasn't funny enough to be good or bad enough to be good. It was just annoying.
Anyway,
it was really highbrow. You can't blame me for not understanding it.
So you're saying that we could have just heard about Susan's radio show. We didn't actually need to hear the radio show to understand or empathise with the victims of it.
Yeah, I'm glad that she has been freed from the slavery that is broadcasting.
She's going to end up with a podcast, isn't she? That's, I think, where they're going with this.
Yeah, someone did say that on Twitter. There's something afoot, isn't there? She's not giving up on it when she was reading out the fans' comments and so on. She's trying to pretend, oh, I've had my time. Oh, what was it she said about, I've got to move the card carousel or something. Thing, relocate the card carousel, as if that's some sort of major job that must mean she has to give up the broadcasting. I love that. I hope she doesn't do a podcast.
I perhaps am the only one being dismissive of Quentin's point of view, but Quentin is the only person out of us who has, you know, got proper broadcasting chops. I know.
I beg your pardon.
I was just about to say, I know you have a storied and deep experience of the podcasting world, but Quentin, you know, he's done the radio, he's done the TV, he's been beamed into houses.
I've done TV. I beg your pardon, sir.
What? When did this happen?
Mid-90s, I produced for TV.
Oh, we've all done TV in that sense, Royfield. I mean, actually being like, up in makeup being applied, 3, 2, 1, and you're on. And then, you know, the cameras are all pointed at you.
But I was the person, the studio manager counting 3, 2, 1, but I was the person actually directing the cameraman. I was actually, you know. But anyway, if you want to say, did I work for the BBC more than a weekend cutting together news edits and stuff, which is actually what I did, the only thing I've ever done for the BBC is paid employee, I don't measure up to Quentin, absolutely not. And I was never a TV personality, but I did do a little bit of TV. It was a long time ago. And yes, in the greater scheme of things, I doff my cap to Quentin's broadcasting nous and chops.
What Peter's trying to say is that Quentin's right.
I was astonished that a man as experienced as Quentin could be so wrong. That's more the way of looking at it.
Right. Now, here's Jonah. Oh, he's burned up a right hornet's nest as our Jonah, but here's his call first.
Hello, Royfield, Kerry and Peter and Dumpty Dummers everywhere. This is Jonah, a.k.a. Jonah Man Jazz. Just got a couple of points to make this week. First one about Tracy. When she first came back into the show a couple of years ago, I was really pleased because I like her as a character. Recently, I've been a bit disappointed how they've been portraying her as sort of a very one-dimensional, stereotypical working-class comedy character. But both the story with Jazz, where she had the run-in with him, and the story with Roman, has shown that she has actually a real person who's got concern for her kids, like any normal parent. And I'm hoping this heralds her as being a long-term character and a long-term realistic character. Next point about the slavery storyline. I understand where people are coming from who've got absolutely no time for Gavin and just want to say, oh, he's evil, he's a slaver. Well, totally agree with that to some extent. But I am liking the way that he's being portrayed in the storyline. I think he is in trying to make sure that the horses are okay when they're transferred. He's sort of trying to salve his own conscience. And then he sort of thinks, well, hopefully I can just forget about it. They're all right. I've done my bit. Somehow that's not going to work out, though. He is somehow going to end up having to tell the police what's happened. And he knows that he's going to get in trouble for that. And that's why he hasn't done that yet. You can criticise him for that, but I think that's what anyone would do, almost, apart from a saint. So just interested to see how this storyline ends.
When he was talking about Tracy and her, you know, the being one-dimensional and then better now because she's a really good mother, and he's hoping that she's a long-term character. I suddenly thought, oh my God, I never even considered that she might not be. How awful. I don't want her to disappear. And he is a bit sympathetic towards the Gavin angle of things, because, you know, he's not a saint, obviously. And he is afraid of spilling the beans to the police, but he thinks he will do that eventually.
I assumed that Tracy was here for keeps now, and I was very happy about that. I completely agree with everything Jonah said. It has been good that they've stopped her from just being this kind of brassy, you know, cackling over the fence kind of working class character from kind of, you know, early Coronation Street. The reason I'm pausing is that I'm trying to think of the right way of seeing about Gavin. I mean, it's nice to hear the practicalities mentioned. Obviously, he's not going to go to the police because that means he's going to go to jail. He's not going to tell Kirsty because he knows that Kirsty is absolutely binary about this and she would not hesitate but to report him and Philip to the police. Mm. So that's been my frustration with a lot of the people who've been trying to sort of just say that Gavin is evil, therefore we cannot support Gavin. We're watching him negotiate this in real time and negotiate all of the complexities that we've spent so much time worrying about, getting so anxious about. Royfield is right. Slavery is there is no good. There is only evil when it comes to slavery. But if you're stuck in it and you're trying to negotiate your way out, obviously there's multiple layers to that. And so, yes, it is nice to hear someone talk about the practicalities of it. I don't think that means that you have to support Gavin.
So, Royfield, what's the hornet's nest of Jonah Man Jazz?
Last week, I speculated with Philippa, where the heck does that name come from? And I said, it's Johnny Hates Jazz. So, this whole thing about, do you remember Johnny Hates Jazz? He's obviously, that's where he's got his name from, Jonah Man Jazz, blah, 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 blah. How wrong was I? So wrong that not only did I put the 1986 hit of Johnny Hates Jazz on the end of the show, and on Twitter, on the Flick app, and my God, on Facebook, if people told me how wrong I was. Royfield, do you not remember Jonah Man Jazz? Did you not sing it as a kid at school? And at first I said, absolutely not. Right, what is this thing? And everybody was remembering it, singing it. Nineveh is a city of evil. There are 50 odd comments of people remembering fondly having to sing this at school. After about the 48th message, I went, bloody hell, I do remember it. We sang it as well. And then what was utterly lovely, putting all the reminiscence to one side, was which is really key to Dum-de-Dum. It's just kind of community. And Jonah says, oh, this is really lovely because it's only taken me 4 years to summon the courage to ring into Dum-de-Dum. I listen every week and this is how I've been embraced. So thank you. So it was just a really lovely little trip down memory lane, which many people had whilst correcting me, which normally is Peter's job, to try and correct and school me. But all the other Dum-de-Dums did, it says, look, you idiot, it's not Johnny Hates Jazz, it's Jonah Man Jazz, and this is where it comes from. And this little nickname which Jonah gave himself made him feel even more included into the whole wider Dum-de-Dum community. So that's the hornet's nest, hardly a terrible one, which was stirred up by Jonah, but really just one of reminding everybody of their school days in the UK.
Cool.
I will admit, keeping you on the straight and narrow does feel like a job, Royfield. You are right.
You know what? If Peter, I think it's your vocation, sir. It's more than just job. So from Jonah Man Jazz, we go to Claire from Clapham.
Hello, Dum-de-Dum and Dum-de-Dummers everywhere. It's Claire from Clapham here in the delights of Tier 4, where everything is cancelled. Although on the bright side, it did save me from the big argument with my mum about whether it was safe to have 8 people for Christmas lunch, which I was increasingly feeling was not, and she was increasingly feeling was. So we got out of that argument because basically we all got locked down. I just wanted to have a quick note to say happy Christmas to everyone all around the world in Dum-de-Dum land. Thank you to everyone who's kept us cheerful all year and enjoying the Archers in good times and bad, monologues and rollicking storylines. Just very, very quickly, because don't want to make him too smug, so I sort of agree with Royfield about whether we don't need to hear from Blake, Kenzie and Jordan to know that they are being badly treated and to have compassion for them. I thought it was all so rushed. It was like, I don't know, it was just too, it was too much. It felt really constructed and artificial, and I just didn't feel it was very authentic, and we didn't need to hear it to know that it was a really rubbishy thing to be doing to people. I do really fear for them. I hope that the downfall comes very quickly. It would be nice if it was someone who noticed, like someone said on Twitter this week, but I'm thinking the police are following Victoria. Something will unravel about the present, or Kirsty will suspect something. But there you go. Who knows? I don't really care as long as it's over. Okay. Happy Christmas, everyone. Speak to you soon.
Happy Christmas, Claire. Yeah, tier four has its merits then if you don't have to deal with a Christmas lunch for eight people. There's quite a few people saying that sort of thing. It's kind of decided things for them. I know that's not the whole story, but you know.
It did get me out of cooking a second meal, and I wasn't pleased, but it was a silver lining.
She does agree with you, Royfield, that we don't need to hear from the slaves to feel compassion. But for me, that's not the point. It's not about needing to hear from them to feel compassion. But we've been over that already. Yeah.
And a lot of what she was saying was about also the way it was delivered to us. And I think that's something that we didn't really, I mean, I think that's where a lot of the nuance between the kind of the two more extreme points of view lie, right? Like they could have made all of us happy if they dealt with it in a subtly different way. If they'd been longer term characters, I think maybe Royfield would have been happier and I would have been happier.
But I liked Claire's speculation about how it's all gonna fall apart, wondering whether the police are following Victoria. That could be something. Or if the gift will lead Kirsty to sort of work stuff out. You know, where they were talking about watching Joy putting multiple pizza boxes out every Tuesday. I thought, why has Joy got multiple pizzas every Tuesday? I became a bit fixated on this. And then I was thinking, I really went to the realms of weirdness, imagining that there's loads of police staking out her house, and that every Tuesday they have pizzas because they're watching what's happening and they're going to pounce.
They've spent time in having Joy as someone who could just pop round any minute. Like, you know, Kirsty and Philip pop round when they need something. And that, you know, after they, was it a rainstorm that meant that Kirsty and Philip went and hid at Joy's house for the day because they were locked out. Anyway, the point is that it's entirely plausible that Joy will be the one who walks in and just points to something obvious that Kirsty, that everyone hasn't seen. It's just like, oh, look, that doesn't make sense. And it kind of is a kind of Columbo style reveal where it's just like, and she, her sort of, her obviousness and her sort of comparative innocence, her sort of specific innocence will sort of shine a light on it. And Kirsty will suddenly have the wool, you know, pulled away from her eyes.
Yeah. I'd love it if Joy. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Joy would be the perfect kind of blunt and sort of foolish accidental instrument to take down. She'd be the perfect one to take him down. Royfield.
Surely this perfect one to take him down would be Harrison Burns. It's his job.
Oh, it'd be too nice about it. Oh, sorry about this, Philip. Mind your head getting in the car. Come on. Oh, yeah. I didn't have you pegged as a slaver. Oh, crank. Yeah.
That's a lovely Christmas jumper you've got on there. So
you're a slaver, but that Santa's cracking.
Oh, Pete Ficklin, you can make me titter at times. All right, so that was Claire from Clapham, me podcasting wife. And now we're moving over to Cheryl, and she's going to tell us about some stuff.
Hi, Kerry and Peter, it's Cheryl calling. Not going to bother saying hello to Royfield this week because he'll have stopped listening by now, probably looking up something exciting going on in Southampton or various facts about it. So you'll have to tell him on my behalf how wrong he is about not wanting to hear the slaves' voices in the episodes this week. I know he thinks that it hasn't added anything and that Philip on his own stitches himself up. However, when I think about things such as that wonderful drama, Three Girls with Maxine Peake, or the documentary this year about Jeffrey Epstein and the stories of the girls involved in that, it's the voices of the victims that absolutely bring home how terrible the situations are. And in this case with the archers, hearing those boys not realizing that they are victims of a horrendous man who has taken them off the streets and taken advantage of them, it just was so heartbreaking. And there's nothing that Philip could have done that would have shown us that side of the story. So, Royfield, you're just wrong. On the upside, really, really glad that Tracy's not going. I mean, who the hell would want to live in a small flat in the Maldives?
Cheryl, I love you. Royfield, yeah, he won't have been listening. You're perfectly correct there. You are listening, Royfield.
Have I missed anything? I was just on Wikipedia looking up facts about Southampton.
Yeah, okay, performatively making his computer ping there, Kerry. I swear to God, this is true. I haven't heard myself laugh out loud in years. Genuinely, I never laugh out loud. I felt this rush of endorphins laughing out loud just then. It's absolutely amazing. Royfield being called out for his on-air research. Last week, Royfield, you had Philip. You were using Philippa like a sort of a secretary. I say, Philippa, can you just look up, what was it? It's just to type this into Google for me, dear Philippa. That's a good lass. Thank you. Yes.
I'm not from Wolverhampton. I'm from Cumberland. Well, you know, I mean, you're going to try and do a mock comedy me. At least get the accent right. You know, you've got me 20 miles wrong.
I like it wrong. It's funnier.
But as long as you appreciate that it's wrong, well, then I can move on.
Okay.
Back to the substance of the accusation. I mean, you were using Philippa like a secretary. Sometimes.
Hardly. If you remember back to that episode, Peter, I was the one, whilst we were recording, that went onto Wikipedia and said, oh, you are right. I didn't use her like a secretary. However,
you got her to do your little bits of admin during the program.
No. Wait a minute. Specifically, with this charge, the charge was specifically to do with, anyway, whatever. Go on.
It's okay. But Cheryl, I thought the victims' voices. She was quoting the three girls piece, the Epstein girls, the voices of the victims bringing things home. You can say that you don't need them because
No. I kind of conceded this, that there's a couple of strands to this which jar with me, and one of them is highly emotional because this isn't an issue which for me is at all academic. So I appreciate that my reaction to it is going to be different from many other people's. There is a stylistic decision that the script writers actually took. Now, I would say, and I'm not saying there is one level of evil which is greater than the other, but the Epstein thing wasn't slavery. It was sexual exploitation of minors. I'm not saying that you should never hear the victims' voices. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying that specifically in this case, considering that this is a drama, I take the point, however, that, and Peter made it well, before that there is understanding how people can find themselves in this plight and having it laid out for you and how they feel whilst they are in that plight and whether they realize that they are. I appreciate that, but I would say that there are two or three various paths that cross over with this storyline, and actually Philip Moss is just bad. Gavin Moss is just bad, but I appreciate the writing in that we are, and I have no moral equivocation about the whole thing, but I'm repeating myself. And for me, this is such a personal issue that I just have to be honest about that, right?
Yeah.
And I also appreciate that people will say that, did you not want to hear the voices of the slaves when slavery was an instituted thing in the 15th, 16th, 17th, 19th century. That's completely and utterly different, because hearing, reading Uncle Tom's Cabin, or the recollections of people who were slaves, or Frederick Douglass, was to tell people that slaves were human beings, because many people didn't believe that they were, that Black Africans who were held in chattel bondage were not the same as you, a white English person or a white Frenchman, etc. We know that is not the case anymore. So we don't have to prove that case. For me, it's like, right, we know that slavery is wrong. It is just a given. The whole narrative structure should be focused on the slaver as to how the hell in 2020 can you be doing this to other human beings when you know it is wrong. You know that's wrong.
I think that's anyway, the same thing that we have discussed, Royfield, is that...
Yeah, but anyway, we are...
If you're a woman dressed in finery and sitting on velvet furniture with flocked wallpaper in a proud townhouse in Bristol, and you know you have to justify it.
1980s.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Quality joke. You have to just Royfield said back in the 1980s. You have to justify to yourself why, you know, that your husband is off, you know, dealing with subhuman people. It's people who, you know, you don't need to worry about their suffering. They've been taken from a worse place and taken to a better place. They've been given gainful employment. And I think, and obviously it is offensive, is deeply offensive when you read about some of those, particularly in Jamaica, where your ancestor from Royfield, if you read about what went on there, it is type Darby's Dose into Google if you want to really turn your stomach. If you know, it's deeply offensive to make a comparison between what Jordan and Kenzie are going through and what some of the people went through on the long passage and in their life in Jamaica or various other places. But there is, it's about the justification that people give themselves in order to be participating in slavery or to be a slaver or to turn a blind eye or to
the whole focus should be on.
Yeah, absolutely. But part of that is that, for instance, the Stockholm syndrome, the inculcation, the convincing of these men that, which obviously went on in the Americas as well, the convincing of these men that they're in an internship. And that was one of the more useful back and forth that they had where, and sorry, I'm going to get the names wrong. I want to say it was Jordan who was questioning the other two when they were saying, oh, we're going to get paid more. We're going to have better conditions. We're going to have more agency with our next boss. You know, Mossy's that with our internship with Mossy. It's educating the woman sitting in her chair in Bristol to say, no, people died for your fine clothes. This is not nuanced. This is not subtle. But, you know, because she has been and we have been fed a crock of lies about how these people find themselves in the positions they are in.
Speaking quite powerfully. And we're going to end the show with Brian.
Hi, everyone. It's Brian. There's been some very good episodes the last few weeks. And this week was another good episode this week as well. Particularly one where we actually got to hear from Blake, Kenzie and Jordan. The scenes where Philip was talking about them as if they were livestock made me feel very queasy, though. Very uncomfortable. And talking of them, Gavin isn't any better, as far as I'm concerned. He keeps indicating he's not happy what's going on, but then he doesn't do anything about it. Kirsty's now married to Philip. That was one opportunity, and there's been others now getting passed on. We'll see what happens. Main reason I phoned up, just to wish you and all the Dumpty Dummers as Merry a Christmas as your current tier allows, and hope all the best for the 2021. I hope this is a better year than this one's been. Yeah, keep safe, everybody, and have a Merry Christmas.
Ah, Brian Holding. Marvellous Brian. Yes. Slightly different tack there. We won't go over what we've already gone over, but Gavin should have done something by now. I totally agree with that. I mean, at that point where Kirsty was about to get married, he could have just gone, no, this can't happen. I know we've said why he hasn't done that, but I just thought, come on. At what point will he? What's it going to take?
I don't know about you, but I'm running out of patience now. The weird thing about the Archers is you're running two clocks. You're running the clock of the narrative within the show, and there's also your kind of like, you know, the hourglass, which is your patience for each of these plot lines. And I do understand that they have to run it in some kind of credible time frame. Yeah. I am sick to death of it. I've learned my lessons. Yeah. I've taken my medicine. I know slavery's bad. I've heard, you know, we've had to watch Kirsty get married to the effer. I'm done with it.
to Brian's point about, you know, bless him, you know, wishing us all a happy Christmas and hopefully a better year in 2021. I really enjoy hearing Philip saying, I've got a feeling next year is going to be the best yet. I thought, yeah, you little shit. You're going to be in prison, hopefully. It's all going to come to an end soon, Peter. You know, hopefully you've got some grains of sand left in your hourglass.
Do you think, Philip, this is one of the things I found a bit implausible. There was a story about modern-day slavers the other day, and it was this Romanian family who had been basically doing exactly what Philip Moss is doing. And then you saw pictures of the father and son, the Philip and the Gavin. And I say Romanian, I'm pretty sure they're Romanian. Apologies if I got that wrong. But they just looked like they were from Central Casting. One of the things is I feel like that you haven't really got a sense of why Philip and Gavin need to be slavers. Kerry and I were talking the other day about just, it sounds like a lot of hassle. They've got to buy this house. They've got to, like, you know, So the amount of profit they're making just doesn't seem plausible.
Without relitigating what we've said at least twice, if not three times already in this episode, you're making my point for me. The much more interesting narrative in all of this is, how the hell can you enslave people in 2020?
Yeah, this is the practical side of it. You know, like, I mean, which is just saying that, so mind-blowingly awful, but, you know, we know they've got a flat. They've had to pay for that flat because they said about selling it for Gavin. So they've had to find the cash to pay for the flat. Also, we all know roughly what someone earns on site per day. So that's, you've only got a certain amount of money to save. You also have to pay for their upkeep, a Nintendo 64 every couple of weeks. It just doesn't seem like there's enough money in it. So there's something fundamentally broken. I mean, obviously there's a psychological side to this. Like, the, you know, he gets off on controlling people. There'll be some kind of personality.
Yeah.
There's psychological there, yeah. and then there is moral. And then the fact that this does go on so much so that there are people who act as middlemen, Victoria being one, shows you that there is money to be made in it. And Philip Moss has told us so that there is, and it's the reason why he can always undercut everybody else. So there is money to be made in it, good money, hence there's an industry.
And then also, you need the capital to get it all set up. You need somewhere for them to live. You need to buy them in the first place or have the time to go and coerce them. There is an uptick to get into business as a slaver. There's some cracks and some sort of creaking going on around the kind of plausibility of it all, the way that's been presented to us.
They only cost 20 quid.
Yeah, that was weird as well. I'm sort of morbidly fascinated by it, but also at the same time, it's sort of, do I really want to pick at that scab?
Yeah.
Well, you've done a good job picking, and I would say that you can make is one of my key arguments for me here. But moving swiftly on, folks, because we've done a lot of talk about, I almost said the rights and wrongs of modern slavery. There are no rights. On a semi-serious point, there is something about trying to wrap up a conversation which is actually thoughtful and is about the nuance comes in as to whether the story is enhanced by the telling of the victim stories in this case over their silence, and that silence being much more powerful, and then trying to wrap that segment up and then move on to another. And you don't have to do it an injustice by just saying, okay, now we need to move on, which is the mode that my brain went into. But on that note, folks, I have to say to Auntie Kerry Warburton, do we have any emails, preferably with an H?
I've just been eating a hot dog, sorry. Mimi brought me a hot dog. Bloody lovely. Okay, so we have two emails. The first one is from B12 Simon, who is on the Twitters as well. I recognise that name. And B12 Simon says, hi, Royfield and gang. I didn't think it worth a caller innering, but here I am weighing in on speed limits. Yes, the national speed limit for a dual carriageway is 70 miles an hour, but not all of them. I didn't raise an eyebrow at Kirsty's driving at 40 miles an hour, as so many are limited to 40, especially in urban or suburban areas. As we're overthinking this, I presume Kirsty and Helen were on an urban dual carriageway into wherever the register office is. Royfield is right. Oh dear. Thanks for the show and big love to you all. B12 Simon. So you were right about something, Royfield.
And B12 Simon is from the wonderful city of Birmingham, as his postcode notes. And he doesn't at all sound, I'm sure, like Peter's mock supposed Brummie, which is completely and utterly right.
No, it was a very specific impersonation of you. It was not the people of Birmingham.
Really? Okay. Second email.
Second email is from Elizabeth Purnell. And Elizabeth says, hello, Royfield, Kerry, Peter and Dumpty Dummers. A couple of things. First, a big thank you for the Zoom party last night and the other Zoom meetings and the podcasts and the film club. They've been fantastic during lockdown. It's great to see different faces and chat to new people. I'm loving the rotating co-presenters. My thoughts about spoilers. Oh, dear. I did a bit of a spoiler, didn't I, on the Zoom, which was, yeah. Anyway, I think that might be what she's referring to. I listened to the omnibus and the podcast when out walking. I'm often a week or two behind. My feeling is that when a big story breaks, such as Kirsty's wedding, you only hear it for the first time once. To me, that doesn't matter if it's during the episode or on Twitter or on Facebook. I don't mind listening to the episode knowing a big reveal is coming. If I want to listen live, I make a big effort to catch up. Oh, good. Wishing you all the best for a happy and healthy Christmas and New Year. Beth P. in Warrington. Aha. So I was a bit worried there that I was going to get told off for doing the spoiler thing. But her point, I think, is that if you're that bothered about spoilers, don't go to places where you might find spoilers.
Well, even Royfield's been listening live the last few weeks, haven't you, Royfield? Because I noticed you've been a bit more current on Twitter about it. That's not me having a dig, by the way, for once. I'm just saying you know, typically you've been a listen again type person, haven't you?
I think I only listen live once.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. I did that thing where I took a tiny piece of information and built a whole kind of universe out of it.
No, it's on too early in the day here, and I'm working. So it's what five? It's like 2 o'clock in the afternoon when it comes on. So no, but I did listen live once, admittedly.
I completely agree. I think if you're that obsessed with being up to date with it, just listen in the evenings after the, or listen again. You can't expect everyone to just talk in code on Twitter all week waiting for the omnibus. Yeah.
I did make a faux pas, though, by talking about on the Zoom on Friday. I mentioned that Tracy was staying and not going to the Maldives, didn't I? And I think someone left the Zoom because they didn't appreciate the fact that I revealed something. And I'm so sorry about that. I honestly didn't
talk
about what I was doing.
I think you're beating yourself up too much. And, my thoughts on this are well documented. I think if it's out there, it's out there. Right. Mm. And you should just insulate yourself if you've chosen or there's been some reason why you can't listen. You can't stop the rest of humanity talking about something which is already out there. It's as a case in point, I am not a big Star Wars fan at all. So the end of The Mandalorian season 2, which is something which I haven't watched because I'm not really into Star Wars. But you switched on Twitter. You switched on YouTube with all these people commenting about pop culture things. Everybody was like, oh my God, Luke Skywalker turned up in the last episode. Right. I'm not even into The Mandalorian and Star Wars. And I know Luke Skywalker turned up in the last episode. It's a case of these things are out there.
Yeah.
They're out there.
Yeah. I think I got overexcited because Susie Rids was right in front of me and I was like, I was so pleased that Tracy was staying because she is her. So yeah, I got carried away.
if you want to avoid information about the Archers, an Archer specific Zoom call is probably not the place to go.
Exactly. And just as a little aside, there's two members of the Archers family who have gone from just being people who I've asked to come on a Zoom and have turned into mates. One of them is Graham Seed, Nigel, and the other one is Susie Reeds, who plays Tracy. So there's a reason why when Ben Norris said on Wednesday that he couldn't do the show, that for a second I thought, oh, we'll just cancel it. And I thought, you know what? No. And I texted Nigel, that's Freudian, Graham, and I said, mate, can you do this? He went, yeah, of course. All right. And also Susie. And Susie is a proper pal. And so much so that when her husband, I think I mentioned this before, but when her husband came out to do two weeks worth of work last year in San Francisco, that she said to me, will I look after him and take him out?
Aww.
So she's a proper little pal.
Oh,
so
he missed out. He missed out big time. I could have given him the proper tour of the
I know. You'd have given him a proper decent tour of all the watering holes, but you'd already left the Bay Area, Peter. So you have to do with me. However, the whole point of this is when she said that she was going, he says, okay, Roma, I'm going to go with you to the Maldives. I texted, what the holy fuck? So I went, you ain't going anywhere. And she just texted back immediately, went, .. Right.
Ah.
Went, your silence is speaking volumes here. Right. And then she started deflecting and talking about all other things. So then 24 hours later, I went, I kind of knew. And she went, oh, well, of course I couldn't say, blah, blah, blah. So she's a good sort, is our Susie Reeds.
She's such a diamond, isn't she? Yeah. I mean, she's just joyful. And her husband featured, didn't he, sorry, in the Zoom, in the background. He was knitting in their amazing kitchen that I have huge kitchen envy over. So it's nice to see him in the background.
Yeah, I tell you, they're two peas in a pod. He is a bundle of energy as well. I don't know how they contain themselves. She's just all, you know, rip-roaring and ready to go 24/7, and so is he, trust me. Utterly a lovely gentleman. We had a great evenings hanging out in San Francisco. All right, so there you go, folks. That is basically the meat and potatoes of the show.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com. Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Whether you're a brand, large or small business, or an individual, you need customers or clients, and the chances are some of your potential customers are probably listening to this podcast right now. From history,
when Napoleon led Boulogne for a year,
politics,
if that person is poor, it's a bad neighborhood, then you have the disproportionate police brutality, which is meted out instantly at people of color.
Culture.
Had they written it that Chris called an ambulance for Alice straight away, and we wouldn't have learned about the severity of alcohol withdrawal either. Well done to the writers. Thank you for making a wonderful podcast, but I'd give Rotherham a miss. Bye.
The Rotherham Tourist Board.
Geekdom.
The flag is a graphic symbol, not a verbal symbol. You know, why don't we just write France on the flag? I mean, we laugh when you think of putting a country's name on a flag.
Society or music.
Young people began to turn away from their parents' ethics and their style of dress, and they began to dance to a new type of music. Wah, bah, 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 bah.
Roy Field Brown's podcasts are downloaded just under 100,000 times a month. So putting your message here could well be a wise investment. If you have something to hawk, sell, or promote, why not email royfield@gmail.com and hear your product or service promoted to up to 100,000 articulate listeners today.
Pete Ficklin.
Hello.
I'm going to be brutally honest with you, Pete. When Philippa does Tweet of the Week, right, it's not you doing it. That's all I'm going to say. You know, you bring a certain something to it, Peter, right?
And like I even, a dung beetle does to a pile of poo, yes. Yeah.
And by the way, a dung beetle takes away from a pile of poo. That metaphor almost
specific to Tweet of the Week, not to Dumpty Dum.
Peter, starting in the bronze position, go. Pete Ficklin, are you ready?
I am.
All right.
Okay, so you said, and go.
Yeah.
Right, okay, here we are. So Archers Addicts at Archers Addicts is making what I think is an interesting but perhaps not funny enough comment. So I'm already starting to be defensive about the inevitable slating I'm going to get. But no, I'm just going to go for it. At Archers Addicts says, they're back again. I'm hearing voices. Is it Waiting for Godot? And the next one. So in silver position...
Oh, Peter, the funniest bit about this is not the tweet. It's just the sort of, well, that gaping silence, really.
I think the reason that Philippa has learnt not to invest emotionally in this, so she just sails through it with sort of style and aplomb. I just come back for more again and again and again, hoping that I'll get approval. Okay, so here we
Peter,
are.
I sent you that tweet. I can remember sending you that tweet because,
yes.
Anyway, doesn't matter. Yeah.
But yes, not because it was funny. So normally what happens is, I read it. But, oh, well, if Kerry says it's funny, it must be funny. So
No. It was in a string of ones where people were going, what the hell is this? This isn't the Archers. Do you remember?
Oh, no. Okay. Yes. No, I do remember that. But I thought that one had been selected because you were feeling sort of literary. But, you know, you've got a book club and stuff. Anyway, so here we are. Oh, look, I'm playing it safe now. I'm going for Dumpty Dum Royalty. We have Mr. Brian Holding at Buggy Swires.
Brilliant.
Yes? Okay. Thank you. Yeah. So here we are. So the Grundys are living in Oliver's house. He's plucking their turkeys, and now Eddie's manipulated him into conspiring to misrepresent the Grundys' product. Perhaps Philip isn't the only one using people.
Ha-ha-ha. I like that one. Very good. Well done, Brian.
Quite a chuckle.
Thank you.
That
sounded really insincere, Brian. I really
yes, it
did.
Change.
But you know, when somebody says to you, "Chuckle," right? I'm not an actor, so I can't convincingly chuckle on demand.
If only there was some I don't know format or kind of structure that you could buy in to know at the right time to laugh in this. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it'll come to you. Anyway. And now in goal position. The moment everyone's been waiting for. The swell of the music. Right, here we are. Andrew Davidson at Andy Make the Tea. All that fuss about Graham Norton leaving Radio 2 yesterday, but not so much as a BBC press release or a Red Arrows flypast for Susan's last show.
That's good.
That was
the
good.
The visual image of the Red Arrows flypast because Susan's left Radio Borsetshire is beautiful.
And as you know, I read that completely sincerely and didn't view it as a joke. I really was outraged at the BBC, not even fictionally or otherwise. Make more note of it. But yes.
Dumdum.com, go there. It has got Tractor. Now, by the time you listen to this today, there will be a link and you'll be able to look at a map of the world and see exactly where every Dumpty Dummer lives. And it's with much excitement that I can announce to you that we even have a listener in Baku, the capital of that petro-corrupt state, Azerbaijan. That's how far and wide the Dumpty Dum writ goes, folks. So if you're hanging out in downtown Baku, why don't you sign up to Dumpty Dum? It'll automatically pin yourself to the map. And then you can then message through the app, through the website, the other person who's in Baku, and maybe I don't know what the lockdown situation is there in Baku. I don't know if you're in a, if you've got a red, amber, green situation as we do here in Southern Ontario, if you've got tiers 1, 2, 3, and 4 as you do in the UK, or whether you're even just COVID free. I don't know how it works down there. But let's say you've had your inoculation and there are no COVIDs, whatever, right? You can then meet up and have maybe one of those sweet teas that people in Azerbaijan seem to quite like together. Talk about the archers and dum-de-dum. Talk about Pete Ficklin, how you quite like his acerbic ways, or how you quite like Auntie Kerry Warburton. You can do that all through dum-de-dum.com. Now, serious point, folks. I've had not one, not two, but three alerts from the manufacturers of stuff on the shop of dum-de-dum.com this morning, saying the stuff is manufactured in insert name of European country. We are not going to be delivering anytime soon to the UK. So it could well mean that if you're trying to get that little special present for your loved one just before Christmas, it might not come because the country is up the Swanee in terms of this mutant strain of COVID. I'm presuming, I don't know this for a fact, that the manufacturers and the distributors of the stuff will have sent you an email telling you of the situation. It's not that you're not going to get the stuff, but everybody has basically ceased sending stuff to the UK at the moment. So hopefully it's not going to knack your Christmas too much. Dumdrum.com is in part an endeavour of people who love the archers, and we get on mic and we chat about it week in, week out. But without the lovely people who are Patreons, there fundamentally would be no show. Now, Witherspoon had a great idea, and he said to me last week, Royfield, why don't you have a page where all the Patreons and all the people who submit via PayPal are listed actually on the website? So we are actually going to do that. But each week, if you are a Patreon, you are going to not only be the sponsor of the website, but also of the show. So you'll get your name up in lights. But if you'd like to join them and be a supporter of the show and get your name up in lights, go on to patreon.com. For the very small sum of $2 per show, you can become a Patreon. And I especially will thank on the next show all the new patrons that we've had in the last few months, because it's a real testament to how Peter, Kerry, Quentin, Rosie and Philippa have been taken into the collective bosom of Dum-de-Dummers that we have people still wanting to support the show with the new roster of presenters. So patreon.com, $2 per show. If you do that, you is awesome.
Remember, to get in contact, you can send us a voice message via SpeakPipe on the website or call 0203 031 3105 to leave a message.
And remember, folks, not that you'll really need any prompting from me, but Twitter is awesome. Tweet. Peter, how can people catch up with you on Twitter?
Pete Fitling.
Auntie Kerry Warburton.
I am not Auntie Kerry Warburton on Twitter. I'm at Kerry Warbis, which is KerriWarbis.
If ever there's a point of the show when I should not call you Auntie Kerry Warburton, is this point. I really should stop myself from doing that. It's such a natural reaction. And of course, you can follow us on Twitter, where we are at Dum-de-Dum. Now, there is potentially a job opening. If you quite fancy yourself at tweeting, why don't you help us out by tweeting as Dum-de-Dum? It's just a great way of just kind of helping out the show. Because the thing is, and I know seasoned Dum-de-Dummers know this, but if you look at my Twitter timeline, you'll see misspelled tweets, words missed out, grammatically incorrect. I am actually a dyslexic. So I try not to really go on to dum-de-dum.com. And since Yokel Bear had to leave us, it's really been a bit like tumbleweed over there. We still have people following it week in, week out, but we don't really put anything out. So here's a message for you, dear listener. If you fancy yourself as somebody who knows how to tweet a little, why don't you give us a little bit of your time and by helping us out? There you go. So quite simply, if you want to do that, if you're interested, email me where I'm royfield@gmail.com and, you know, we can get you all set up. Facebook, Now, normally people wince when I have my 2-minute diatribe about Facebook. All I'm going to say is the US justice system. Obviously, listen to Dum-de-dum. Facebook isn't all bad. It is a utility which has lots of use. And one of the uses is connecting with people who like the stuff that you like, i.e. the Archers. So if you're a fan of Dum-de-dum and you've got a, you know, you're on Facebook, and a lot of you are, why don't you type in on Facebook, Dum-de-dum, and join the merry band. And I tell you what, folks, Witherspoon's snaps, so Saturday non-Archers posts, are ridiculously popular. And he sets the topic and people just go for it. Talking about setting the topic and people going for it, the Flick app, and more people are using it. And that is fantastic. Quite simply, go into Apple iTunes Store or Google Play. You type in Flick app. It's going to tell you about sports. Don't worry about that, though. Bloody hell, the Cleveland Browns did not do well yesterday. We smashed the Giants. Good and proper. The Flick app, go there. And really, what we try not to do is really talk too much really about either Dum-de-dum the podcast or the Archers the show. But it's just somewhere where people indulge their passion. So whether it is where they are around the world at any one point, or Christmas prep and restriction headaches, or play out music on Dum-de-dum, which is, go on to that. It's lots of fun. And also, if you're into film, it's a great way of connecting with the dates of the next film club and what films people will be watching. Right, Pete Ficklin, it's the season of Goodwill to All Men. I really enjoyed this episode. And I was going to say this off mic to you and Kerry. I do love it when not only when we come together to talk about the Archers, but where there is something of philosophical heft which we can chew the fat over. And it's definitely been this episode. So thank you for joining the very merry band of Dum-de-dummers this year and becoming not only a guiding light, but somewhat of a star this year, Pete. So thank you for that. Auntie Kerry Warburton, I have said this to you before, but I'm going to say this again. I've been a big fan of yours for years. You are so bloody good on Twitter. I was itching for years to get you to be on mic and to be part of the team. And boy, oh boy, have you made yourself comfortable and indispensable part of the whole Dum-de-dum firmament in a matter of no time at all. So much so that you now get fan mail. Auntie Kerry, so glad. My instincts were proven right, and I knew that you'd be awesome on the mic. So there is me saying to the pair of you, I hope you have a wonderful Christmas, and let's hope that we all have a wonderful new year. But I don't want to just sign off for you. So, Pete, what's your sign off, sir?
As quickly as I can. I mean, joining Dumpty Dum has been very different to what I expected, and mainly in that there's a lot of friends being made, very specifically Kerry, the lovely Rosie Porty and Quentin, and of course Philippa as well. And it's been an absolute treat. And Roy Ford, you, of course, have made that all possible. I'm very, very grateful, despite all of the kickings I give you. Oh, and to your point, you could have got a lot worse today, by the way, so be grateful. How nice I was.
Dead season of Goodwill to All Men, apart from Royfield. Auntie Kerry.
Oh, gosh, this is like a love-in. I'm enjoying this very much. Not just what you said about me, but it's true what Peter just said. He and I have built a lovely relationship. We chat and we message, and he's so funny. Bloody love him. I can see why you brought him to the podcast, Royfield. Definitely complete huge asset. Also, Quentin, me old mucker, he's part of it too. Rosie Porty, love messaging her. Bless her. She's having a bit of a time of it with her house move and stuff, but it's nice to keep in touch with her. Philippa, I thought she was brilliant on the Zoom. I'd like to get to know Philippa more. Thank you so much, Royfield, for grasping that nettle and inviting me along to join in, because I bloody love it. Thank you. I'd like to say Merry Christmas to everybody, and may 2021 bring us all closer together.
And just a final couple of notes from me. There will be more Dum-de-dums. I said there's going to be one on Christmas Day. And then next week we have Quentin and Rosie. if I can get round to it, including the another little special medley of Dumdy Dums, some of the best ones that we've had in the last couple of years, which will go out as a thing as well. I don't know why I never remember to say this, and I really should say so at the top of the show, and I'm going to have to rewrite the intro script. But we do have a presence on YouTube. If you've missed the Friday Zooms, you can go onto YouTube, type in either Dumdy Dum or Royfield, and you will find them there. And some of them are just like great fun. Well, they're all great fun, but some of them are just like really, really special. And this week's was a great one where, as I said in the show, we had Graham Seed and we had Susie Riddell who joined us. And are just so great. So glad to be part of the whole kind of Dumdy Dum experience. So if you can't make the Zooms, because I don't always put them up as podcasts, you can go on to YouTube. Please hit that subscribe button. So whenever we put out another broadcast, you will be notified to hit that subscribe button and actually hit the bell. So that's just about it from me. Suffice to say that now it is time for our play-out music. And this week we play out with not Johnny Hates Jazz, but with a rendition from Jonah Man Jazz. Toodaloo, tarara bit, tatty bye. There you go.
Bye.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.